Okay, so if I asked you right now to just visualize the word happiness, what's the first thing that comes to mind? Just a quick flash.
For most of us, it's going to be something loud, something high def. It's winning the trophy or the big party with confetti.
Totally. It's that heart-pounding electric feeling.
Exactly, it's high voltage.
Right. We're sort of programmed to think that if your heart isn't racing, you're not really happy.
Yeah.
But the thing we're looking at today just it completely flips that on its head. We're starting with a quote from Gautama the Buddha, and it really makes you pause. There is no happiness higher than peace.
Which, I mean, let's be honest, to the modern ear, that sounds a little bit
boring.
Yeah, a little bit boring.
It sounds like the runner-up prize. Like,
yeah.
Oh, you didn't get the excitement. Well, here's some peace.
Exactly. But that exact reaction, that little fear that peace is just emptiness, that's what we're digging into today. We're doing a deep dive on Chapter 48 of the RFT to Freedom program, and the chapter is called Deep Calm as a Support.
So before we get into why anyone would actually want this this deep calm, let's just orient everyone.
Mm-hmm.
For anyone new to this, can you lay out the map for us?
Sure. So the RFT to Freedom program is this really comprehensive guide for moving out of compulsive patterns and, you know, into a more autonomous life. RAFT itself is an acronym.
Right.
It stands for Recognize, Abandon, Freedom, and Train. And it's just pronounced like the word raft.
And we are smack in the middle of the F stage. Freedom!
We are. We've moved past the really heavy work of abandon where you're actively letting go of old habits. And now we're kind of in this open space of freedom.
Okay, but this is where I got a bit confused reading the material, because the last chapter was all about energizing joy. It was high energy, you know, waking up, getting the wind in your sails. And now the very next thing is, okay, time for deep calm.
It seems like a contradiction, doesn't it?
It really does. It feels like you just told me to floor it, and now you're telling me to pull the handbrake.
Yeah.
What, that sudden shift?
Well, it's less of a brake and more of a cooling system. Think about what joy or excitement actually feels like. It has a vibration to it, a high frequency. What happens if you stay in that state for too long?
You get all jittery. It starts to feel less like fun and more like
anxiety. Exactly. It becomes agitation. So the RAFT program explains that while that joy is crucial to lift us out of, say, a dull state, it's not a place you can live. You can't run your engine at 7,000 RPMs forever.
You'll blow a gasket.
You'll blow a gasket. Deep calm is the cool down. It's moving from those choppy waves into what the program calls the glassy sea.
I loved that phrase, the glassy sea. It's such a powerful image. Like moving from the open ocean into a totally protected harbor where the water is like a mirror.
It's a beautiful metaphor. But I want to pause on that because I know someone listening is thinking, okay, glassy sea, that sounds great for a weekend retreat, but I've got a job, I have kids, I have stress. If I get that calm, won't I just lose my edge?
Yeah, yes. The zombie objection. Am I just checking out? Am I going to become a vegetable if I'm not running on stress?
And it's a totally fair question.
Huh?
But it's based on a misunderstanding of what this calm is. The RAFT program has this engine analogy that, for me, just made it all click.
Yeah.
So imagine a car. State one. The car is in the driveway. Engine's off. That's dullness. Lethargy. Nothing is happening.
That's the zombie state.
Right. State two. The car is in neutral, but your foot is slammed on the gas. The engine is screaming. It's overheating. There's friction, but you're not actually going anywhere. That's stress. That's the rush we often chase.
High effort, all friction.
Deep calm is the third state. The car is on the highway, top gear, cruising. All the power is there. The creative energy is online, but the engine is running cool and quiet.
So it's about efficiency.
It's peak efficiency without the internal drag, and that's the key. Calm isn't the absence of power. It's the absence of friction.
That clicks for me intellectually, but what's actually happening in the body, the chapter talks about the nervous system, this shift from sympathetic to parasympathetic.
This is so important. I mean, we spend most of our lives kind of locked in the sympathetic nervous system. That's your mobilization system. Fight, flight, freeze.
The get ready for a bear system.
Yeah, which is great if there's a bear, not so great if it's just an email. Chronic stress is just our bodies living in that state of overdrive.
Mm.
Deep calm is the intentional move into the parasympathetic system.
The rest and digest mode.
Right. It sends a signal to your whole body that just says, you are safe enough.
I like that phrase, safe enough.
Mm-hmm.
It's not saying the world is perfect. It just means in this moment, you can put the armor down.
And that biological feeling of safety is what enables what the program calls the pivot of freedom. And this, for me, was the real core of the chapter.
This was the big aha moment for me, too. It says, We have to literally change what we value. We have to stop chasing stimulation and start preferring peace.
It sounds so simple, but it's actually radical. I mean, if you've spent years in cycles of compulsion, whether that's scrolling on your phone or whatever it is, your brain is wired to want the spike. You want the drama, the excitement.
Oh, it's so true. Silence can feel threatening. Mm-hmm. If things get too quiet, I start looking for a problem to solve because the quiet just feels wrong.
That's it. That's what the program calls an addiction to the tremble. That little background hum of anxiety that we mistake for being alive, the pivot is the moment you realize that tremble isn't actually fun.
It's just stress wearing a party hat.
Yes. And the pivot is when you finally decide, you know what? I actually prefer the feeling of the cool engine over the buzz of revving it.
And then the bait doesn't work anymore. The compulsion is selling a rush, and you're just not buying.
You've outgrown it. And the program brings in some pretty heavy philosophy to back this up. It talks about the Greek idea of ataraxia.
Ataraxia. Sounds like a medication.
It does. But it's this ancient concept. It basically means an untroubled mind. But the key thing is, it doesn't mean you have no troubles in your life. It means the inner argument about your life has stopped.
The inner argument, that little voice that's always going, this should be different, or why do they say that, or I need to fix this right now.
That whole commentary is the friction in the engine. Ataraxia is when you drop the rope in the tug of war with reality.
Okay, but that brings me back to the zombie question. If I stop arguing with reality, if I'm just floating on this glassy sea, how do I engage? If I see something wrong in the world, do I just say, well, ataraxia?
It's the biggest misconception that calm equals being passive. But the RAFT program uses this insight from Stephen Batchelor, a secular Buddhist teacher, and he suggests we swap the metaphor of seeing for listening.
Okay, how does that change things?
Well, when you see something, there's often a distance. I'm the subject, you're the object, I'm observing you, analyzing you. It can be a little cold.
Right, it's analytical.
But listening, think about how you listen to music you really love. You don't try to grab it or dissect it in the moment.
No, you open up, you let it in.
Exactly, you receive it. Yeah. And the argument is that true stillness isn't about blocking the world out. It's about quieting your own internal noise so you can finally, truly hear what's going on for someone else.
That reminds me of the figure they mentioned. Avalokiteshvara.
Yes, or Guanyin in China. The name literally means the one who hears the cries of the world.
Wow. That really landed for me. The idea that you actually can't hear the world's cries if you're screaming inside your own head.
You just can't. If your engine is redlining with your own stuff, there's no space for empathy. So it's a total paradox. You need deep calm to be a truly compassionate, engaged person.
So it's not checking out. It's actually the only way to truly tune in.
It is.
Okay, so we get the why. We want the cool engine. We want ataraxia. But how do we actually do it? We are creatures of habit.
Chapter 48 gives us the protocol of release.
And I love that it's called release. It's not a protocol of relaxation.
What's the distinction there?
Well, relax feels like a command, doesn't it? If someone tells you to relax now, what happens?
It tense up even more. It's impossible.
Right. Release is different. It's about subtraction. You notice the tension that's already there, and you let it go. You're not adding something. You're undoing something. Let's get into the specific tools. The first one is the 5% rule. I tried this, and it's surprisingly effective.
It's such a great hack, especially for perfectionists. You know, you scan your body, you feel your shoulders are up by your ears, and your first thought is to force them all the way down to zero tension.
And then you fail, and you get frustrated that you're bad at relaxing.
Yes. The 5% rule says, forget that. Just soften it by 5%. Can you drop your shoulders half an inch? Can you unclench your jaw just a tiny bit?
It feels so much more achievable. It takes the pressure off.
And what happens is, once you give your body that little 5% of permission, it often just takes care of the other 95% on its own. You just have to crack the door open.
Okay, another one. Downshift with the exhale. This is straight biology.
Right? Pure biology. Your inhale is tied to the sympathetic stimulating system. Your exhale is tied to the parasympathetic calming system. It stimulates the vagus nerve.
So no complicated breathing exercise is needed.
Nope. Just make your out-breath a little longer than your in-breath. If you breathe in for 4, breathe out for 6. You are literally manually telling your nervous system to cool down.
Then there's using contrast. This sounds like it's for when you're so tight you don't even know it.
Yeah. Sometimes our muscles get so used to being tense, they forget what loose even feels like. So the instruction is to tense them even more.
On purpose.
On purpose. Squeeze your fist as hard as you can. Hunch your shoulders right up to your ears. Hold it for a few seconds. And then let go. The contrast wakes the brain up. It reminds it, oh, that's tension, and this is release.
The one I know I'm going to struggle with is the micro reset.
Ah, everyone struggles with that one. It goes against everything our culture teaches about productivity.
It sounds so simple.
Right.
Just stop for 20 or 30 seconds between tasks. Like after you send an email, before you open the next tab, just stop.
And what feels so hard about that for you?
I feel like I'm losing momentum. The urge is to just power through to the next thing and the next thing.
But that momentum is actually the momentum of stress. We carry the tension from one task right into the next, and it just builds all day. The micro reset breaks that chain. It lets the engine idle down before you rev it up again.
It's 30 seconds now to save you hours of burnout later. But you have to be willing to face the quiet.
Which brings us to the most advanced barrier the chapter mentions. The tremble.
Notice the tremble. Yeah, this one felt deep.
It is, because you can do all the exercises, you can be sitting perfectly still, but then you notice this little vibration in your mind, a little voice going, what are we forgetting? Shouldn't we be worried about something?
I should be doing something panic.
That's the tremble. And the practice isn't to fight it, it's just to name it, to say to yourself, restlessness or worry. The moment you name it, you're not inside it anymore. You're observing it.
You're watching the engine instead of being the engine.
Exactly.
The chapter ends with some really practical journaling prompts. And I think this is so important because you have to write this stuff down to make it real. The first one is about redefining boredom.
This is a huge one. It asks you to find a moment in your week that you labeled as boring and to rewrite it, but this time use the word peace.
So instead of I was stuck in traffic for 20 minutes and it was so boring, it might become I had 20 minutes of unexpected peace in my car.
And it makes you ask, what is boredom protecting me from? So often we call it boredom when we're actually just afraid to be alone with ourselves.
There's also creating a cooling script for those moments when you're really triggered.
We all have them, a certain person, a topic. The idea is to have a pre-written mantra ready to go.
Right.
The program suggests this is heat, not truth. Let the body cool first.
This is heat, not truth. That is so powerful because in the moment, anger or craving feels like absolute capital T truth. It feels so urgent.
It does, but it's usually just chemistry. It's just adrenaline. Mm. If you can name it as heat, you create just enough space to not send that text. You wait for the engine to cool down.
And the last one, the tension inventory. Asking a part of your body, what are you bracing for?
It's like having a conversation with your own body. Maybe your tight shoulders are trying to protect you from a difficult conversation. The practice is to just acknowledge it, to say, okay, I see you. Thanks for trying to keep me safe. But we're okay right now.
It really all comes back to that feeling of safety, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Without safety, there's no calm. And without calm, there's no real freedom.
And that ties directly into the ancient teachings that this whole program is built on. In the suttas, there's this specific causal chain.
Like a sequence.
Exactly. It says that joy leads to tranquility, tranquility leads to happiness, and happiness leads to concentration.
Wait, so calm comes before happiness?
It's the foundation. You can't have a stable, unified mind if it's shaking with agitation. Deep calm is the bridge you have to cross to get there. It's what makes the raft sturdy enough for the journey ahead.
So we're not just chilling out for the sake of it. We're building the structural integrity for what comes next.
We're building a vessel that's strong enough to hold the truth.
I love that. Now, before we finish up, we have to give credit where it's due. All this comes from the RAFT to Freedom program.
Yes, specifically the RAFT to Freedom workbook, which was written by Dr. Catherine Jacob and Vince Cullen. They've done such a masterful job weaving all of this together.
And the most incredible part is that they've made the entire 66-chapter program available for free online. You can find it all at raft2freedom.org.
Absolutely. We're just scratching the surface here. If any of this is resonating with you, please go check out the full program.
Okay, so here's the final thought for you to take into your week, inspired by chapter 48. Ask yourself this. When things finally get quiet, what do you assume is about to go wrong? And what are you protecting yourself from by staying just a little bit tense?
That's the question right there. Catching that assumption that peace itself is a threat.
And to take us out, you have one last quote from the chapter.
I do. It's from James Allen. And it sums up why this deep calm is actually a source of power, not weakness. He writes, "The more tranquil a mind becomes, the greater is its influence, its power for good, its success."
Power, not passivity. Thanks for listening to The Deep Dive.
See y'all next time.